Good afternoon. We're going to start the meeting. Madam Clerk, can you determine if there's a quorum?
We do have a quorum with all members present.
Who is reading the board goals tonight with the board? Mr. Larson, I believe you're reading the board goals.
Manus, it's to sit in the borough school district. Vision, mission, beliefs, values, goals, and objections. Vision. Matsu's Borough School District will be a model of excellence in teaching, learning, and engaging all students. Mission. Matsu Borough School District prepares students for success. Beliefs. We believe that all students can and want to learn. Success breeds success. The needs and the best interest of students drive all decisions. Stakeholders' participation is crucial to student success. Core values: student stewardship, accountability, empathy, quality, integrity, efficiency, respect, and lack of reprisal. Goals: we will improve student success, achievement, and performance by focusing on their career and college readiness. We will increase the graduation rate. Our schools will welcome families and community members in the education of our youth. We will create and maintain a safe and healthy environment for all students and staff. Annual objectives and accountability. Assessed by quarterly matrix and timeline.
Thank you. Mr. Jensen, could you lead us in the pledge, please? Thank you. This takes us down to item two, which is approval of the agenda. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
I make a motion that we approve the agenda.
I'll second it.
Motion made by Member Lacey, seconded by Member Welton. Is there any objection to approve the agenda? Agenda's...
I'll make a motion to approve it.
You did.
You did.
Sorry.
So there's no objection, so the agenda is approved? This takes us down to item three. This is persons to be heard on non-agenda items. We'll read the guidelines once again. The speaker states his or her name for the record. The speaker is limited to 3 minutes per meeting. The speaker is limited to non-agenda items. Agenda items will be open for public comment as they appear on the agenda. The speaker's comments should be appropriate for all audiences, including school-aged children. The speaker is limited to comments of a general nature, positive or negative, which may not be attributable to any specific individual. Issues involving concerns specific to any single individual should be submitted in writing and given to the board clerk to be resolved. The issue may be determined to be appropriate for persons to be heard or may be handled in an executive session or may be routed through a more appropriate complaint process. No disturbance or willful interruption of any board meeting shall be permitted. Persistence by an individual or group shall be grounds for the chair to terminate the privilege of addressing the meeting. The board may remove disruptive individuals and order the room cleared if necessary. This is not a question and answer time. Speakers may be referred to the superintendent or designee or take the issue under advisement. It will be a maximum 1 hour per meeting. This is 30 minutes for the first half, and then towards the end of the meeting we'll have another. So with that, Madam Clerk, are there folks that have signed up?
Yes, the first person is Jill Stevie.
Please come forward and state your name for the record. So we're going to ask everyone to speak into the mic since we are being broadcast to folks that are not present throughout the valley.
Hi, my name is Jill Stevie. I'm a wife, a mother, and a constituent. I also happen to teach Spanish at Wasilla High School. Speaking Spanish is part of my identity. It's how I teach and learn, it's how I identify myself with others, and it makes me a global citizen. I'm very proud not only to be bilingual, but to pass that knowledge on to youngsters in my community. Before I became a teacher, I was a wildland firefighter with the U.S. Forest Service. I worked very hard in oftentimes very dangerous work conditions. I learned many valuable lessons and developed skills and tools that I use frequently in my personal and professional life. One lesson I learned early on as a sawyer cutting down trees for forest management was about displacement and movement. Let me explain. When you cut down a tree, there are many considerations. Which tree do I cut? Why this one and not that one? If there are other trees nearby or loose branches, you have to watch out for widowmakers and excuse me, the direction you want to fall the tree. Most importantly, I learned that every inch of I learned that for every inch a tree moves at the base, it moves an entire foot at the crown. I liken this to the impact of the school's district's decision to implement the 7-period day, increasing class sizes while decreasing the total number of teachers to teach those classes. At the district office, the decision only impacted decision makers, let's say, by an inch. But at the high schools, that same decision impacted students and teachers by at least a foot. I'll be honest, it feels more like a mile. Transition's hard, but that's not what I'm talking about. Yes, the 7-period day offers more options to students. That talking point has been received loud and clear. I dare you to ask a current high school student if that's on the top of their priority list right now. Changing subjects. If you will allow me, if you'll go out on a limb with me and consider quality relationships. The reality of being able to develop a quality relationship with 224 students in your classroom isn't realistic. There are numerous teachers with this many students. During the critical bonding period between teachers and students in August and September, there was little bonding, and it was not for lack of trying. Believe you me. I, like every teacher I know, love the classroom, love teaching, and I love Spanish even more. It is not truly realistic to develop a quality relationship, the kind of relationship we all yearn for in our lives, in the 7-period day. This isn't good for kids, families, or communities. Let me restate. It's not for a lack of skill or motivation that I do my absolute best to meet this challenge. There's an inherent flaw in increasing course offerings and the number of students in a classroom while decreasing the workforce, regardless of budgetary cuts. If kids are your priority, show me. Show them. The 7-period day is flawed. There's no way to deny, whether you feel it by an inch or by a mile. Fortunately, tomorrow's a new day, and mistakes can be corrected.
Thank you.
Brenda Rupp.
Hello, and my name is Brenda Rupp. I teach Algebra 1, Geometry, and Health. This is my 8th year of teaching, and I need you to know that struggling students are not benefiting from the 7-period day. Several strategies that I used last year to help students succeed simply are not as effective this year. It is disheartening to see students failing when I know they would be passing if we were on a 6-period schedule like we had last year and that is currently used in Fairbanks, Juneau, and Anchorage. My instructional time is less. My ability to build rapport with students is less. My ability to reteach and build a sense of community within the classroom is less. The 7-period schedule limits my ability to be the teacher I want to be and that I have been for the previous 7 years. The 7-period schedule reduces the quality of our classes. The extra class teachers teach and the shortened amount of class time to teach each class has not benefited students or teachers. I have written more discipline referrals this year than any other year in my teaching career. The pace and workload has hurt struggling students. Even though I work 60 hours a week to do the best I can for my students, I still feel inadequate. I ask you to reinstate the 6-period day so that I will have the resources and support that I need to do my job well. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Brenda Winder.
Did you say first name again?
Brenda Winder. The next person is Bob Williams.
Good evening. I am Bob Williams, a 2011 nationally board certified teacher. At several board meetings, numerous teachers have shared with you the negative impact of the seven-period schedule in terms of hurting struggling students, decreasing effective teaching, and lowering the quality of the courses being taught. Public comments by district representatives have included remarks that the seven-period schedule was like doing laundry, not fun or rewarding, but something that we have to do. If a policy change has decreased capacity, creativity, collaboration, and achievement, we do not advance the discussion by comparing the difficult, complex, and challenging task of being an effective teacher to doing laundry. I work 60 to 70 hours a week trying to ensure that I have done all that I can do to help all my students be successful. If effective teaching were as easy as dumping a load of clothes in the wash, pushing a button, and walking away, then perhaps the seven-period schedule this year would be reasonable for teachers and students. Other public comments to the board by district representatives have included vigorous, confident, and emphatic endorsements of the seven-period schedule without evidence that it is in the best interest of our students. Statements that have described this schedule change as similar to what teachers have adjusted to in the past are inaccurate. The attempts to portray the schedule change process as transparent and supported by teachers are simply not true. Let's be clear. The survey of 185 high school teachers by MSEA in our district shows that for every 100 high school teachers, 87 of them feel this policy was a mistake. There are problems if policies are implemented with virtually no followers that believe in the change. This schedule is extreme. We do not find this type of schedule in other large districts that are also pressed for funds like Juneau, Anchorage, and Fairbanks. Those districts also want to save money, but there is an understanding that compromising quality should not be the first thing on the agenda. Examples of a seven-period schedule for the lower 48 often come from instances of severe dysfunction or significantly different with study halls and teachers only teaching 5 classes out of 7 instead of 6 classes. Our community steps up when there is a real need. We must not be incapable of looking back and correcting a mistake. I began my teaching career in the Peace Corps, the Gambia, where the per capita income was $300 a year. I worked to help my students be successful, even though I had to write exams on a cement wall with chalk because printing exams was an expense we could only afford for finals. We did not have air conditioning, and the temperatures were often 100 degrees almost every single day. Yet, the Gambian school system had a student schedule and teacher workload that was more sustainable and reasonable than ours. There was a clear understanding that investing and supporting effective teaching is quite different than doing laundry. If they can do it in the Gambia, West Africa, we certainly should be able to do it in the Matsu School District. Thank you.
Thank you.
Tim Walters.
Hello, my name's Tim Walters. I teach at Wasilla High School. And so much of what we've heard over the past several weeks, many months in fact, has been about the seven-period day. And guys, I've spoken to you before. So much of it comes down to funding. Seven-period day was implemented because of funding. It was a way to try to do more with less or try to do the same with a little less, and it really hasn't worked out. We've seen other problems due to funding also in our district. We've seen the loss of the middle school model across the district. If you've been reading the Frontiersman, issues about the loss of librarians across the district. 11 elementary schools and middle schools have suffered or have dropped about 23,000 books that have been checked out just last year because the loss of elementary school librarians or middle school librarians, they're teaching classes part-time. 23,000 books at the elementary and middle school. That's huge. That's literacy. So much of this comes down to funding, and the die is cast for next year. We can agree upon that. But we need you to advocate for real and substantive funding for next year and the years coming. Part of that could be by repealing Board Resolution 006, and advocating for funding for teachers in classrooms. I recognize and I appreciate the work you did for funding on the transportation bill, and I realize that will put some teaching positions back in the classroom. We came back this year, or the health trust, our insurance came back this year with a 0% increase, which is massive, and that will put teaching positions back in the classroom. But we need you to advocate to our borough and our state for substantive funding to keep teachers in classroom teaching kids. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jeff Johnson. Neil Moss.
My name is Neil Moss. I'm the president of Alaska SCTP. That's the Scholastic Clay Target Program. I'm also the head coach of our local team, the Grouse Ridge Rangers, and the state director for SCTP for all sporting disciplines, trap, skeet, and sporting clays. I just wanted to talk for a minute about SCTP as a high school sport. SCTP has been around for about 10 years. It's in 43 states, including Alaska. We've been active in it up here in the valley for about 8 years. Some of you may recognize the name Corey Cogdell. She started in this program. She's from Eagle River, started at Birchwood Shooting Range in Chugiak, and won the bronze medal in the Olympics in China 4 years ago, and is well on her way to going to London this summer to compete again. In 14 of those 43 states, SCTP is a high school sport. You can varsity letter in high school with a shotgun. And that's my goal here in Alaska and has been for the last 8 years. I didn't prepare a long speech for this. Hopefully the handouts that I gave you will speak for themselves and we can talk at a later date. But I wanted to get the information out there. This is almost a fully funded program. It really isn't going to cost the school district anything to put it on. We have a local range here in the valley that's more than able to accommodate the kids shooting and welcome the kids up there to shoot. We've sent teams to the national competition the last 2 years. One young lady last year, been shooting for 6 months, came home with a gold medal. Our senior boys team, the first year they went, they took 15th out of 500 teams. Last year they took 8th out of 500 teams, and they're scheduled to go back again this summer. Hopefully they'll do even better. I don't have a lot more I can say. There's insurance available. There's funding available. There's grant money. Midway Shooting Supply has donated literally millions of dollars to this program for state and college, or for high school and college teams. I just got an email yesterday. They just donated another $3 million to the program, of which Alaska gets a pretty good chunk of it. We got $90,000 this year to start new teams, which we have started 6 teams now in the state of Alaska, and they're all in the brochure. And my 3 minutes is up, so I'll call it quits. But if anybody has any questions, my contact information is in there. And who didn't get one? No, I got one left.
Thank you.
Linda Holler.
My name is Linda Holler. I'm a taxpayer and voter in the Matsu Borough. I'm also a teacher at Wasilla High School. Again, my posters are a review of where I have already been on this issue with you. Tonight, I am going to speak about what the 7-period day has done to the atmosphere in our schools. At my school, we don't laugh anymore. Our support for each other is virtually gone. I do not know how Deb's dad's doing. He has cancer. I haven't had an opportunity to ask her. I didn't know that Sandy and Sally and Ronica were leaving until they were gone. I never got a chance to wish them well. It's even worse when I know that a student has experienced a misfortune and they slip out without me acknowledging it. What they must think of me as a person. These things may seem trivial, but they are things that make your work environment personable, not robotic-like. When I asked other teachers about this change, there were many who said that it has affected their home life as well. They go home exhausted and frustrated about what they accomplished or did not accomplish. Several said, "I just want to take a nap. I'm so exhausted. I take less work home because I'm too exhausted to do it anyway." I can identify with that. My own husband tiptoes around me a bit more than he used to. He pointed out one day that I had fewer funny stories to share, and we used to laugh hard at some of them. And I got to thinking, yeah, there weren't many this year. I contemplated that, and I thought, what is it? And I realized, or at least I think, it's because I'm so rigid in my classes that I have to make sure we get where we need to be, and there's no room for much flexibility. Thank you.
Thank you. So take us down to item four, Borough and City Reports. Is the manager of Wasilla, please come forward.
My name is Bert Cottle, City of Wasilla. President Dunleavy, board members, I just wanted to give you a quick update on where we're at on the library in case anybody's not had a chance in the capital budget as presented right now, and hopefully it won't get the red ink. There's $175,000 put in there. So with that $175,000, once the borough finishes their subdividing and deeding over to us, which should happen at the end of June, we can start the prep work. So we're excited about it. And we'll, of course, put up some 4x8 sheets of plywood says home of the future library. So anyway, so we're progressing along and we're still excited. So I just wanted to do a quick update. Thank you.
Thank you. Palmer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Superintendent Paramo. My name is Doug Griffin. I'm the city manager of Palmer. And I know the last thing you need is more paper, but it'll keep my speaking brief since we're promoting a few events that are coming in the next couple of years. And then just to give you kind of a rundown of some of our capital projects that, of course, as you are waiting to see if they pass muster with Governor Parnell, but this is what's in the budget, capital budget for the city of Palmer that is going to him for his consideration. Just real briefly, on May 17th, we're planning a project fair that we're going to hold at the MTA Event Center to try to showcase that facility. The ice will be out. We're hoping to get public comment and feedback on projects that will go forward either for consideration for local funding or more likely to the legislature for next year's round of projects and to prioritize those. So there's a handout and an attached flyer about that. It's just a 3 hours on Thursday, May 17th. Door prizes, people have their little sticky dots to vote for different projects that are on the list that have been suggested by city staff or the public. and a chance just to talk to city departments about department services, city services, questions you've always wanted to have answered about different things that we'll have staff available there to answer questions. So it's a brief little time. And, of course, we have spring cleanup coming up on May 7th to 12th that we work with the Chamber of Commerce. It gets bigger and better every year. More recycling, more community involvement, hopefully. I know the Chambers gives away some bikes, and we try to make that a fun event to make sure that people know that spring is here. And then finally is our list of projects that did get funded. The big one was a land purchase out by the wastewater treatment plant, which we're still kind of studying the future of how the city is going to deal with wastewater treatment. I know the borough is looking at a regional plant, and we do have some issues with our plant of staying in compliance. So it's acceptable that we get that. It is something that was on our list. It was something that we're maybe not quite ready for, but we'll probably go forward with purchasing the property so we're ready for the future. The other projects, the ones that have particular interplay with the school district, is, again, another phase of expansion of our MTA event center so that we can install an elevator and finish the expansion there, including backup generation facilities. And the rest of them are just trying to make and the sidewalk improvements. Again, we hope that, along with some planning we're doing with safe routes to schools, will make it safer for the children that attend Palmer area schools to get to and from the schools on their own when it's not 6 feet of snow. And the rest of it's just kind of cutting basic stuff. If you have any questions, feel free to call me. Thank you for the time. Any questions? Have a good evening. Thank you.
Thank you.
This takes us down to item 5, administrative reports. Dr. Perarmo.
Thank you, Mr. President. We have our very own Delaney Mitchell to present a report on youth exchange.
Can I have the students from the back come up and my youth exchange officer, Jeff Johnson? They're here to talk a little bit to you about Rotary Youth Exchange. I'm an outbound exchange student myself. I'll be going to Hungary next year. In the blue shirt is Caden Holliday. He's a rebound student who was in Finland. And Elena was she's a rebound student who went to Taiwan. And we have Ellen, who is an inbound student from Denmark. So they're just going to say a few words about their exchanges.
If I could start off, my name is Jeff Johnson. I'm a volunteer and a youth exchange officer at the Palmer Rotary Club. I know I have some members here. Eric and some of the other people here in the audience are all also members of our club. I was going to read you a speech, but I didn't get much. I didn't get much written down, so I'll stay away from the speech. Just quickly, the reason I asked Delaney to try to get us onto the agenda is just let you guys know what's going on with Youth Exchange, with the Rotary program. I know you have many programs that come into the Valley. I deal with these students. I deal with the Rotary clubs. Just to tell you a little bit about our program, the way our program is set up is we do send every student that comes in. There's a student that goes out. And so that's why I wanted to bring what we call rebound students to show you that not only are there kids coming into the country and to our school district, but we also have students that go out. Our exchange is a one-for-one exchange. Every district in the world that we exchange with, we bring a student from that district into Alaska. So like Delaney is going to Hungary next year, there will be a Hungarian student in Alaska, not necessarily the Mat-Su, but in Alaska that's actually exchanging the exchange with Delaney. So we have about 19 countries that we exchange with right now. We have about 26 students in the Rotary program. And so I just wanted to let you know about that. I was going to give the rebound students a second just to tell you a little bit about their experiences. We always try to send out juniors as our goal so we can get the kids back in the school, come back, have a year here to finish school, get ready for their next step in life, and then also share their experiences. Obviously, they help me recruit and things such as that. So at this point, I'll let Alina and Caden say a couple words about their exchanges, and then I'll close it out. So dive in, guys.
My name's Caden Holliday. I was abroad last year in Finland. I'm currently a senior at Palmer High School. And I was in a small town called Porvo. It's about 50,000 people. It's near Helsinki. And it was really a life-changing experience for me. I think I developed as not only academically but also culturally and linguistically. I became very near fluent in Finnish. And although I've lost some coming back, that's definitely been an interesting linguistic experience for me. And it's affected my choice of colleges for next year. I'm attending Hampshire College in Amherst, Massachusetts. Basically, I chose the college because of its linguistic opportunities and its abroad programs there. So it's definitely affected my life, and I think it's a great program that, that would be good for anyone.
Hi, I'm Alina Sorensen. I did an exchange to Taiwan last year, and I was actually living in the capital, Taipei, which is about 8 million people. So it was a lot different from Palmer, living in a small town like Palmer, and but it really opened my eyes to different ways that people can live, not just in another country, but in another situation, like living in a community that had, it was a much bigger community, obviously. But the experience really changed how I look at the world and see things. And I know now that I want the focus of my my education after high school to be on foreign languages and international relations. And that's led me to applying and being accepted to a school in Switzerland that I'm going to, and I'll be attending in the fall. And I'm going there to study foreign languages and international relations so that I can hope to promote goodwill and positive relationships between the U.S. and other countries. So I think it's a great program, and it really does a lot for the community, not just the kids, definitely the kids going out, but it also brings other kids here to learn about Alaska and our culture, too.
And my name is Ellen, and I'm from Denmark, and I'm attending Palmer High today as a junior. And the thing about exchange is that it's really a mind-opener. And I think you get another look in the world and yourself, and then you, like, I personally got a totally different view of what I want to do, and it's a mind-opener in the end. Yeah, I like it.
Just a couple more things I'd like to say is, first of all, thank you to LeBron Gafael. He helps us get the kids in every year. Without LeBron, obviously, you guys wouldn't let us bring the kids in, which is very important to us. Sometimes we push the deadlines that LeBron sets on us, but we're all volunteers here, so we LeBron's good to work with, so thank you to LeBron. Also, the school administrators, they deal with lots of exchange programs. They're always very good to me. I deal with the people in this building mostly just because I work with Palmer High School, but we have two other volunteers, Stacy Lowe, who's a doctor from Wasilla, who deals with Colony, and Debbie Bashu, who's a doctor here in Palmer, who deals with Wasilla, and they always have good luck dealing with the administrators. So thank you guys, and you guys in the front office for letting them deal with us. So just one more thing to finish this out is we are a totally volunteer program. There's nine of us in the leadership group, and there's 25 youth exchange officers all over the state, and we're all volunteers. We all do it because we enjoy the kids. So I hope you guys, you know, I don't know what reports you guys get about youth exchange, but most of the time when you get reports, they're probably the bad side, not the good side. So it's nice to bring you the good side once in a while. So Delaney, would you like to say something?
I just want to say also that I'm very fortunate to be able to go on exchange, and I'm really thankful that the school district's been cooperative with working with me to get my credits in order so I can have this amazing opportunity, and I just want to thank all the volunteers at Rotary who helped make it happen too. So thank you guys.
Thank you very much.
Mr. President, the next administrative report is another partnership in our community, another partnership like Youth Exchanges, but it's the Mat-Su Schools Foundation. And I believe the president, actually two of our employees here volunteer their time on that board. So Please welcome the Mat-Su Schools Foundation.
Hi, my name is Paul Morley. I'm president of the Mat-Su Schools Foundation.
And my name is Katie Conover, and I'm a board member.
It's a nonprofit organization, 501c3, dedicated to expanding educational opportunities for youth beyond what the district can provide. So we've prepared a visual presentation for you, which helped lead us along. We'll try to stay within our 3 minutes. Some people might know that the first part of the origins of Mat-Su Schools Foundation began with looking at the development of the career and technical high school. And then it kind of morphed into other things.
One of the Schools Foundation's big projects is Dolly Parton Imagination Library. They serve as the 501c3 for this organization. And what we do is we sign up families that have children under the age of 5, and our goal is to get them ready for kindergarten. And we deliver information. This is via our website. And we hold community events. This was an enrollment event out at the Big Lake Public Library to try to get some of our outlying communities involved. And kids each month receive an age and developmentally appropriate book. It's free of charge to the families. And it's sponsored and financed largely through grants from the State Department of Education, but also from United Way of Mat-Su and local donors. And I think no one would argue that reading to your kids is good for literacy and good for our community. But I just want to share just a few, some data on how important it really is. The University of Alaska did a research study, and they found that after just 1 year of being in Imagination Library and receiving books, 77 reported reading to their children every day. And 93% of the parents felt that it did, in fact, prepare their child for kindergarten. And 76% reported being very enthusiastic about reading. And we hear that all the time, how excited the kids are to get those books in the mail. And similar studies have been done across the United States. In New York, they found that the likelihood of a child being read to every day doubles, and it increases every month and levels off at 99% after just 29 months in the program. Interesting for our community is that low-income families reported that 98% said that it changed their parenting behaviors, just getting a book in the mail for their child. And this is another event that we had at Wasilla Public Library. So we work a lot with the local libraries and the school libraries, and we really appreciate all the support that the school district gives the program as well.
Okay, another important thing we do is we offer $500 mini grants to teachers. People apply. We awarded 7 of these grants this year. This is a selection of some of the things we've funded. The pictures largely speak for themselves. You can see a young person interviewing an elder, and this is her painting of that person. They also wrote biographies. Avalanche safety workshop. Greenhouse. Glacier view. Marine science. Physics, so middle, elementary, and high school level.
And one of our goals is to really make sure that we are diverse when we give these grants. So we really try to hit as many schools as we can at all levels and all academic areas as well as extra areas. It is amazing to see what a teacher can do with $500. It's really exciting when we get these photos back.
In the resource room, they used the video equipment to help educate parents at home about how some of the techniques they use in the classroom. This is Talkeetna group doing oceanography. Nice to see young ladies doing science and engineering. We like to promote that. And, of course, our cross-cultural clientele. when Dr. Burnley died last year, we were fortunate to get a $5,000 donation from his wife, and we decided to initiate a $2,500 scholarship to a student who had committed to studying in Alaska and had a vision of how they would be returning their skills to the state of Alaska. So we're in the process of we got 10 applicants this year, and we're still in the final stages of that selection right now. And we also have a $1,000 Curtis Menard scholarship. And Linda Menard makes that decision, and she's in the process of going over 11 applications for that. And then recently we just got a $10,000 scholarship or donation from First Student, and they decided to break that up into five $2,000 scholarships. The deadline for that is coming up the end of this month, so we're trying to get the word out. At least one of those scholarships will go to a student support services student. So right now we're looking at expanding our capacity to reach youth, and we're going to look for other kinds of funding, and including we've got a relationship with a grant writer trying to expand what we can do. So we're going to look at a few of the ideas for the future here. As you can see, there's a wide range of things: art and drama, world languages, culture. Transportation to field trips has been an issue. We're trying to, you know, supplement what the district already does or what they can't do. Gifted and talented. Training for parents. A nice outreach partnership with Matsu Health, developing a facility for the Palmer Hay Flats Science Center. And, of course, long-term vision, trying to build up our endowment fund. So right now, our funding comes from fees, membership fees, a grant, fundraising. You might want to talk about that a little bit. That's pretty substantial.
Just to give you an idea of how much it costs to send children books in the mail every month, our annual budget is $96,000, and it's a continual process to raise that money. But like I said before, the research just so strongly supports that kids are starting our schools much more prepared to learn and to read, and that we just really feel like that's beneficial. So the fundraising for Imagination Library is continual, not only grants but individual. If you're interested, it's matsuimaginationlibrary.com, or I'm sorry, .org.
This is our site, and there's our address. So if anybody's interested in the upcoming deadlines and wants further information about our organization or how to apply for scholarships, it's all there. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Very well done. Thank you. It's exciting.
Thank you. This takes us down to item 6, Superintendent Update. Student Advisory Board Report, Member Mitchell.
Good evening, everyone. I just want to start by saying the next Student Advisory Board meeting will be April 25th at Palmer High School. This is our last meeting for the year. We don't meet during May just because of finals, and everyone's very busy with school. But on this last meeting, our new executive board members will be moving into their chair positions, and all of our new members will be in attendance at the meeting. And this is when we introduce our goals and our plans for next year, which we've been working on the past few meetings. Also, ASOG, the Alaska Association of Student Governments Conference, was just last weekend at Kodiak High School, and I was unable to be in attendance. I was at a Rotary conference, but I heard from a lot of students that it was a really awesome conference and really beneficial to everyone who was there. So, thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Paramo?
Thank you, Delaney. And they did take part in that school lock-in at that time, too. So, and they just said that the student government kids were excellent and you know, followed through with the emergencies that happened on Kodiak Island at the time. So thank you for that leadership, Mr. Jensen and his team. He really responded well to that. Yes, for the superintendent report, the capital projects update as well as the budget are coupled together. As you know, there have been many updates since the end of the session. Well, actually, the end of the first part of the session. I know that this morning, I believe, our delegation, along with the State of Alaska legislators, met in Juneau again, but we do have some information about bills that have passed and, of course, the capital improvements that were provided our school district. Please know that all of these items are awaiting the governor's signature for adoption. However, we have positive reviews and positive momentum that we will move forward these items. So with that, do we have that for everyone up here? Yes, if we could. Yes. Sorry, Mr. Dunleavy. Keep moving you. Thank you. And this way our audience can see this good news as well. I'm going to go through all the pieces of the budget that made it difficult for us to have a balanced budget without a reduction in staff. Now that the pieces are together, we believe we have good news. It was the efforts of our team of staff, administration, school board, our assembly, as well as our delegation in Juneau. For the fiscal year 2013, for the total state funding in CIP and instructional projects, please know that we did receive our top five items. Three of those items have revenue that can that we had already planned for, so that will provide for additional or, I guess, a retention of staffing. So please know that the Alaska Middle College, Science, Technology, Engineering, and Air Force JROTC all received funding for next year. We had a plan B for those projects, and so now we can keep those funds operating towards our whole school system. The state funding for other capital improvement projects are divided by school sections. Please know that elementary schools listed will receive items and improvements, and this made up 1.3% of the total appropriation. Our middle schools received outdoor rec at Wasilla, which is about 1.4% of the appropriation. Our high schools received a little over 10% of the appropriation. Small attendance area schools received about three and a third. Special mission schools received a little over 1%. And our charter schools really did well. And we're happy to say that they received 48%. Of almost 49% of the total $5 million. So this is good news for our district, especially in the sense of the one building at Academy, because we know that since the bonds went through at 70-30, that was difficult to bond. So with that, I want you to focus at the bottom right. What we are doing, we had presented a budget at the beginning of the year with all the information and revenue that we knew, and it was approximately 144 positions, about $14 million that we were short due to subsidies in food service, subsidies in transportation, and fixed cost increases. With these capital and instructional improvements from Juneau, we can retain 13 of those staff members. Moving on to another bill that passed, please know that Senate Bill 182, that was for pupil transportation, turned in the omnibus bill. They use that for the vehicle, and the pun is intended, for the whole education funding. So obviously they chunked a lot of things together in that bill. And please know that the transportation part of 182, if you look in the gray shaded area, we were in a deficit this year of funds, moving into next year as well. However, due to the funding in 2012 and 2013, we do show a benefit. We are in the black. One of the things that happened in the bill in the 11th hour was kind of tricky. We had placed in this bill that the increase would be 3%, which was based off of the Anchorage CPI. We received that number from Alaska statute. It is actually in the statute that the contracts are made on the Anchorage CPI. When the bill went through and it was in the hands of the caucus, I believe that they thought maybe 3% was too much. So they made it 1.5%. They didn't realize at the time that their own statute called for the 3%. So, with that being said, in 2014 and 2015, we would have to go back and adjust that. So that was just like I said, an 11th hour change in that bill. But we didn't have access to that caucus at the time. We did have people waiting outside the door, but, they didn't know. It was something that, they didn't know that they didn't know that it was, in their own statute. So it is an easy fix that we will go back, to attack in future years. But that means that next year we can retain of those 144 that we had looked at possibly having to reduce without this funding. We are up to 46 FTE. Now, in the nutritional services subsidy, we made some changes that returned to the federal guidelines, which enabled us to retain two more FTE, if you will, if we look at about $200,000. But Representative Stoltz also sponsored a bill in the House and assisted. It was actually came from the Senate and moved over to the House, which is 160, which really encourages local market reimbursement. The Massu School District actually purchase almost twice the amount that we can get back in subsidy from the state, or reimbursement rather. So we actually will not have any subsidies move to food service or transportation next year. And initially when we started this budget session, we were about $4.5 million in subsidies to the operational fund. So these bills and the work in Juneau, really what we want to say is I know this base student allocation, the BSA, was a real target, but for the MATSU, again, remember the BSA brought us $3 million, and yes, it would have been ongoing funds, but this is almost a half of, this is almost $5 million. So we're really happy this retains more. We will show you what is one time and what is ongoing, but we're focusing, as we know, the way that the funding goes in our state, it really is year to year. So I'm going to focus on next year and the good news. So for fiscal year 2012 and 2013, the foundation formula actually changed. They used our original bill, the Senate Bill 182, to literally fund education. That's where they deposited their education funds. And what happened is that we had requested that career and technical education does not start in ninth grade, and one of the parts that we were asking for is to make those funds more liberal so that we can use them down into seventh grade. And that was approved. And not only was that approved, but they also they increased the multiplier. So we receive in our district for the CTE funding a little over $600,000. So now we are up to retaining 55 teachers that we were looking at having to not retain now that these numbers are in. In addition, our initial bill of Senate Bill 182, which was People Trans, now called the Omnibus School Funding Bill, also changed the minimum required local contribution. And this has been of interest of late because everybody wondered, how did that get slipped in there? Basically, it is really neutral for MATSU. As you know, back in 2001, through the work of our representative at the time, actually Senator Lyda Green, and some senators in Anchorage, in 2001, growing areas benefited by having only a 50% increase in assessed valuation after 2001, because growing communities also had to put money towards things like bonds to build schools. And so MATSU was a big benefactor of this. In fact, since that time, over the 10 years, MATSU has been the only school district who has grown steadily over those 10 years. So we were able to, the minimum contribution in state law is 4 mils, or they had the or, if your assessed valuation was growing, it would be 50% of that assessed valuation after 2001. That caused a lot of problems around the state, especially when you're losing growth, if you will, or not growing and losing students. So what they did to fix that was to now make the floor, if you will, they didn't change the ceiling, but they made the floor to 2.65 mils, which is exactly what Anchorage and MATSU provide in their local municipalities and boroughs. So basically, MATSU set the new floor. We don't benefit by this by a large sum of money. We do get $68,000 in local contribution in addition to the minimum. Our borough gives us more than the minimum contribution. Please know that. So I will share that a little later. But this was just something tricky. There was $20 million to hold harmless boroughs that moved less so that they could still give the money to their school districts, if possible. But MATSU, this was pretty much neutral for us, and basically it made the folks around the state feel like their local contributions were fair. The next piece of information is basically the state foundation formula based on Senate Bill 182. And this moves into the formula that demonstrates the minimum contribution at 265. Please know that the minimum required local is about $24 million. Last year, our borough gave us double that, $48 million. The MATSU School District, in our budget presentation, requested a 3% increase. And our thinking behind that was that the borough itself has an ordinance that keeps them within a 1.5% increase in their taxes. We didn't get an increase last year, so what we did was request our 1.5% increase for this year, as well as the increase for last year, totaling 3%. Please know that at the borough meeting on Monday, when they presented the budget, 3% was in their budget. So they're going to honor our request. Last night, I did thank them for considering that. Remember, last year it was flat funding. This year they're increasing by the 3%, which we feel is fair and equitable. Remember, we did request also that it continue to increase until it lies between the contribution of Anchorage and Fairbanks, but incrementally look for that. Other significant budget enhancements, if you will, came in the form of a 0% increase in health insurance results in insurance benefit savings of over $3 million. Remember, the increase in insurance is over $4 million, but we still do have an increase in workman's comp. A large part of that, we brought back in our custodial services, and that is just an area in which more folks do get injured, as well as our liability. So the insurance part of it that was employee-driven for all of our employees was a little over $3 million. And I really attribute this, the board and the unions last year when we resolved contracts said we will work towards finding a solution in health insurance. And groups met twice a month. We had four union groups, the two primary ones of CEA and MSEA, met readily. Of course, they had the majority of the employees. I would really like to make a comment. It was courageous leadership to continue to ask for and advocate for their employees by the CEA group. Lori Miner and her team knew that an increase of even the 15 to 20% was a big pocket item in the employee's pocket. And so we did go out to bid, and the bids came back, and NEA really dug deep and came back with a 0% increase. And again, this isn't just for MATSU, this is across the state. So this is good news for all kids in all districts. Also, we did receive one-time funds from the governor in the amount of $25 million across the state. That increased by $5 million from last year. MATSU's share, of course, is based on our average daily membership, is $2,890,000. We did have an increase in E-rate revenue, and we look to have E-rate increase every year as we build capacity through the fiber that was given. We also are counting on that 3% from the borough, and I feel really good about it. Every indication was that it would remain in their budget. And then the additional district expenditure reductions. This was asked by our board at the beginning of the year. Any job that was non-instructional, not in front of children, what we did was put a hold on the hiring and reviewed it. And every hire, believe it or not, I have to approve. So I don't approve many of them. And so basically through attrition, we are making up this money. So I believe, and Ken has assured me, that we will get there if we can find that $1.6 million. Basically, we're not hiring back non-instructional positions, eliminating those to be able to put teachers in the classroom. And we will meet those. And given the scenarios of the bills for food service, transportation, career and technical education, health insurance, one-time funds from the governor, E-rate, and the increase in the borough, we look to have zero layoffs. And so this is huge to us. It's a lot of work, but we were like, yay. So if you take a look in 2013, our projected increase, anything in blue, please know, is not a guarantee. Anything in blue could be one-time money. Or if you look at the borough appropriation in the first line, $24 million is the minimal contribution, and then the borough can add as much as they do, as they desire. Again, the cap is probably $10 million above that, but they really hit between the minimum and the maximum. Again, one-time funds is in blue. So we are ecstatic that next year we are looking positive. We are looking to retain what we had this year and not take any more reductions. But we've heard our folks say it might be just kicking the can down the road a little bit. We know that, but that is due to the funding that happens at the state level and the unknowns. Again, I'm sure we will face insurance every year, as every district will across the nation, and really every business will. We will again face one-time money and the increase to the base student allocation. But for next year, the work that we really needed to have happen in transportation did come through. The next page does demonstrate this. I don't want to be a downer, but all of the blue items again would equal a deficit in future years if we did not get that one-time money again. That is how our state has chosen to fund us. I believe that it, if you're getting one-time money, I'm not going to complain. Of course, it's very difficult to plan. Of course, in January, we had to present a balanced budget to you that showed eliminations of staff to make it balanced. But with the work and the cooperation and the networking, I'm happy to say that we will retain our programs. The recommendation from administration is for May 2nd to hire back. We will have funds, we know, for all second and third year non-tenured teachers. We look to hire all teachers back, even first year non-tenured, by the end of the school year. However, as we get close to narrowing our programs, and to the end of the year, and we're so close and we don't have any reserve, we would need to be able to match that the folks that we have retiring and the positions that they held and the people that we're retaining and the positions that they held and the certifications match what the students need, because really we are a student-driven, student-needs-driven organization. In addition, we need to ensure that that 3% stays in the borough's budget. So with those two things in mind, my recommendation to the board is that second and third year non-tenure teachers be given approved contracts May 2nd, and that as we find the final numbers and see that the people leaving could match the people that stay, that all staff be retained and given contracts by the end of the school year. Thank you. Any questions? I'd be happy to answer them.
Member Larson. Member Larson.
You said additional district expenditure reduction of $1.6 million are non-teacher positions. How many positions are we talking about that have been reduced so far this year?
Most of them are in the business side of the house, but there's other things such as equipment. When we received the career and technical education multiplier, some of that went into staffing, but some places we had to build up the welding at Sioux Valley and different items we had to purchase to have programs. We had to purchase the equipment. So we moved that money from equipment, that's a large sum of it, into instruction. And then we also took away a little bit of textbook money because we have a smaller group of on our curriculum cycle. That was about $200,000. And then the rest I would ask Mr. Forrest to comment on.
Members of the board, so for example, the risk manager left, you know, we've not replaced that position. In addition, we had the budget director leave. That position's not been replaced. It's been consolidated. So those are two examples, for example, just in my office. We have other positions throughout. We have some positions in facilities that have not been replaced. In addition, there are other contracts where we're looking at spreading the cost over 5 years instead of paying all for it next year. Software contracts is the best example where we want that. We've gone to the vendors and said we really don't want to pay all these big amounts. We would like to spread that over 5 years. So we're looking at financing efforts like that to generate the 1.6. In addition, discretionary funds in non-instructional areas have been cut 10%.
For supplies and material.
That would be everything at the district office.
Member Larson.
As we wind down the year, would it be possible to get an accounting of what has been talked about, the positions that have not been refilled or the ones combined, as well as the savings throughout this year, that non-instructional savings?
Absolutely. We can present that.
And also, the retired staff that we're not filling, how many positions are we talking about?
Actually, if we do receive the borough 3%, we will fill those positions. So, but the trick is, for the last folks who have certifications, we need to be sure that they are certified in things that where they can slide into those jobs, those positions. And so it's just an HR movement to be sure that we don't we're not retaining folks that we actually cannot place in classrooms where principals need them. So we're not using our retirements as a reduction, because we believe we will have the same FTE this year. We just have to ensure that the certifications of our one-year non-tenured, who basically a lot of these folks were hired in September, October, throughout the year, that their certifications match and can go into positions where folks have retired. So we're not looking at reducing through retirements. We're looking at placement appropriations, appropriate placements through retirements, and it's just going to take more time than May 2nd.
Mr. Forrest, want to add to that, and then we'll give it to Mr. Larson.
Yeah, to answer Member Larson's question, what we will present to the board on May 2nd is a proposed budget. We've been giving you preliminary budgets. We hope to be able to present on May 2nd. If not on May 2nd, because if we do not have the borough number, we will have to wait. Then on June 6th, that first meeting on June 6th, we will present the board a proposed budget, and it will include a reconciliation of staffing by year. It will show you the changes in supplies, materials, et cetera. You'll be able to see all of that. We'll make an effort to make sure we answer those questions for you, and we'll make every effort to get you that document early.
Member Pauser.
I notice about $320,000 go into Matsur Borough administrative fees, about a 5% fee for the CIP. Is this, I know it's normal for our borough. Is it normal for other boroughs and cities to take that kind of admin fee?
through the president, yes, it is. It's indirect. A lot of other places, if school districts are independent, they can directly fund the school district. So the people, you know, processing that work would receive that money, and it's just because of our bank is literally, our depository is at the borough. On that note, I would like you to know that Mr. Dunleavy, our president, Member Gaddis, met with an Assembly Member Culligan, the manager of the borough, the mayor of the borough, some additional staff, Mr. Forrest and I, and Gene Stone did have that meeting in regard to the projects at the borough, and they did let us know that all borough projects from our bond will be run through the borough. And so the updates provided at the school board will be off of a once-a-month report. We haven't received it yet. They will have a report once a month for us on all bond projects from the October 5th, 2014 million dollar bond. So we did get word that they will direct all of those bond projects.
The 5% admin fee.
Yes. Oh, the bonding is different. No, there's 6% placed in there for expertise if they need to hire them for personnel.
Laura Larson.
Is there going to be any lapse money this year like there was last year?
We're still calculating the status of that. We will, however, as we did last year, be providing the Board of Education with a list of recommended capital improvement projects that we hope you will adopt, which will allow the district to move those funds, should there be many, into those capital improvement projects, leaving just a small reserve which may lapse. But it would be our recommendation that the board look at the list provided by administration for improvements that are one-time in nature, like the reconstruction of the gymnasium in the ad building into a boardroom. That was one of the projects you approved last year.
Through the president, and those were created, a lot of those funds, the same reason why we're trying to save the funds moving into next year. If we had a position this year that someone retired in October, that person wasn't paid anymore. So it went into technically the reserve. Now we're saving the full amount of that salary into next year to hire new FTE teachers. That's part of that 1.6. But this current year, it would go into that reserve. That's why that reserve is building, is because we haven't hired back a lot of our retired folks in the business side.
The other one is, the board may recall, and I believe it was Member Gaddis who said when we presented the budget, you're showing a shortfall in transportation. What are you doing to ensure that if we are not funded, you're covering that? So we've made an effort throughout this year to ensure that that was held in reserve. And with Senate Bill 182 now funding that, those funds now become available.
Just briefly, there's there's awful scenarios, there's good scenarios, and there's great scenarios. We were looking at an awful scenario. I think we're at a good scenario now, but we're not at a great scenario, because we're still going to be putting on, if our estimates, if our past battle holds for the future, we'll still put on 400 kids a year next year. But there won't be an increase in staff, so there's going to be more kids in classrooms. A great scenario would have been, obviously, for a much steeper increase to be able to get ahead of that curve. So I think I speak somewhat on behalf of the board that we're grateful that through the hard work of administration, our delegation and lobbyists, et cetera, that we went from an awful to a good scenario, but it's not a great scenario. I think it's something we need to keep working on. To that end, just a brief recognition. Representative Gatto passed away very recently, as we all know, and he worked right up to the end for this school district and for this House district. And obviously, it was an unfortunate situation. He was ill, but he knew going into this session, because I had a conversation with him, that he wasn't feeling well, and obviously we were all optimistic for a longer life for Carl. But even even with that occurring, he's still focused on the city of Palmer, the what is now a different house district, but his house district as well as the school district. And so I think some of what you see in the budget is a result of his efforts and efforts of his colleagues that wanted to support Carl right to the end. So I wanted to just take a moment to recognize Representative Gatto for all of his hard work, because he, too, sat here at one time at the school board advocating for kids, and he continued that when he went down to Juneau. So I think it's fair to recognize Carl for that. With that, are there any additional questions on this issue here? Excuse me, Representative Welton.
Representative.
Member Welton.
Thank you. I don't have questions other than I don't know how you guys did it, because this information came so quickly. You burned that midnight oil or something. There's magic fairy dust or something that you guys do, but you did an excellent job, and I really, really appreciate all the efforts of everyone going into this. And I know that decisions that you have to make, that, you know, they ultimately, it comes to us to approve things, but you have done an incredible job, and the whole team, and I want to really thank the whole team for working so hard.
Thank you. Let's just go down to item 7. It's going to be a brief item, then we'll take a brief recess after that. Item 7 is consent agenda.
I move the consent agenda A, minutes April 4, 2012.
Is there a second?
I'll second it.
A motion made by Member Cordero, seconded by Member Lacey. Is there any opposition? Motion passes. Let's just take a brief recess, which constitutes our action items. First one is A, 12-114, Birch Tree Charter School Calendar. Is there a motion to move this item?
I make a motion that we move 12-114, Birch Tree Charter School Calendar.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion moved by Member Lacey, seconded by Member Pauser. Are there any members of the public that would like to speak upon this item? Seeing none, is there a staff report?
We can answer questions if needed, Mr. President.
Are there any questions from the board to the staff on this item? Seeing none, are there any comments from the board to the staff on this item? Seeing none, let's vote. We are voting. Motion passes. It's unanimous. This takes us down to item B, 12-116, NCLB resolution to federal delegation. Is there a motion to move this item?
I make a motion to remove 12-116, NCLB resolution to federal delegation.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Motion made by Member Lacey, seconded by Member Cordero. Are there members of the public that would like to speak upon this item? Seeing none, is there a staff report?
Mr. President, we are able to answer any item for clarification in regard to requirements of NCLB as needed.
Are there any questions for members of the board regarding this resolution? Member Welton.
I've been doing a little bit of research on the issues, and of course I've been involved in it since I don't know when, but the questions that I have... if we stand out and do this resolution, are there issues with retaliation to the district for standing out for this? Would we then have more government scrutiny? Would we therefore have more issues that audits and things like this if we stand out for this?
Through the president, interestingly enough, I believe that EED, when they had their new commissioner, he requested an audit of every department. MATSU, this year, every department from federal programs, career and technical, our homeschool programs, special education, and business were all audited by EED this year. I believe they're looking for a baseline. My understanding and my reading of this resolution is requesting flexibility with the rules and the funding. We work through a response to intervention model, which helps all kids and assists all kids. And we do run into obstacles when you can only spend this money for this and this money for this and this money for this, when the goal is to bring all kids, move them, all kids forward, whether their race, nationality, their academic achievement, or whichever school they belong in and go to and choose to call home. So this, in my understanding, there wouldn't be any provision that would cause us harm because we're requesting flexibility with their funds to meet those goals.
Thank you.
Member Larson.
Is it my understanding that other states, at least half of them, have gotten a waiver on NCLB? Is that correct?
It's a different, yes, but it's a slightly different ballgame. They have complied with, you get the waiver if you give up something else to the Department of Education now, and some of that centers around college standards. In other words, you can't just apply for a waiver based upon, for lack of a better phrase, logic or rationale or data. It's, if you do something with your college, we may give you, your college standards, we may give you a waiver. What this is asking is, and I'll just be brief because I was the one that brought this forward, is when the concept of a teacher-child public education system began, it was the teacher that made the decisions. It was the teacher working with the child and working with the parents that made the educational decisions that determined the outcomes. And conceptually, or theoretically, everything that came after that, administration, buildings, regulations, and so forth, the idea was to support what the teacher did in the classroom. I've talked to many teachers. I myself am a teacher, have been a teacher, still certified to be a teacher, worked on this for years as an administrator. And the fact of the matter is the flexibility in the classroom now is it just constantly is being diminished. So we're being asked by Washington and through Juno, because Juno right now, every dollar that goes to the Department of Education in Juno, 70 to 80% of it is passed through from the federal government. So in essence, Juno has become an office for the federal government. What we're asking for is the folks that know best on how to deal with kids and their issues are teachers in the classroom. So what we're asking for is give us the money as a, almost as a block grant, and allow us at the local level, especially the classroom, to determine what is how we best use that money, as opposed to having folks long way from here not having any idea what MATSU is about, or the individual child standing before that teacher what that child needs. So this is all this is asking. And just to answer Member Welton's question, because it was a good one, I would say that we would probably be with about, it would be thousands of other school districts that have offered resolutions such as this, thousands. Member Welton.
Mr. Stone, you sent me this email. May I read it?
Sure.
Okay. There are no states that have pulled out of NCLB. It started in 2002, and originally they had until 2014, that was 12 years, to get to proficiency. Although NCLB set their mind on standards, the measurement tool is not honest. Alaska will be at 83 to 85% non-proficiency by 2014. It's a large topic, and okay, because the standards have been put in place before waivers are allowed. At this point, 14 states have requested waivers, but they have not been granted.
They have since. Yeah, that was,
okay.
That was a bulk release from.
Okay. There have been 14 states that have gotten the waivers then.
More than 14 now.
More than 14. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, I was going by this, so I just wanted to verify that I'm going on good information. I did some other looking into things and found that Senator Begich's office has a statement about NCLB, and I'd be willing to read part of that if I could. Are we at discussion time?
Let me find out if there's any more questions, and we can use that. Are there any other questions regarding the resolution? Questions at this time as opposed to comments? Okay, Member Welton, I guess from the comment stage.
Okay. This was just a brief excerpt. It comes from ensuring Alaska schools offer strong STEM programs means that we have to get out from under the rigid rules of No Child Left Behind. From day one, I've criticized the education law because it doesn't work for urban or rural schools in Alaska. That's why I've encouraged the governor to apply for a waiver to No Child Left Behind. 37 states with Republican and Democratic governors have done so. Now, does that mean that they've actually gotten the waiver? I mean, does anybody know? But this comes from Senator Begich's office, and in general, Senator Begich does support this. And so I go on record that I support the resolution. The problems that I see are that once we get rid of NCLB, it needs to be replaced with something that doesn't hurt our minority students, our the different categories of students, the migrants, the different, you know, English as a second language, and other groups, and that we don't forget that that is what our mission is.
Any other comments?
I was just going to say, Member Welton, all of those states, even those that have received waivers, they still have accountability pieces to them. They still have to demonstrate that they're going to require some level of proficiencies for their students.
Yeah, Member Cordero.
In relation to what Member Walton just mentioned, Mr. President, I was recently at a meeting with members of the Hispanic community in Anchorage from different sectors of the community, and they were saying that Hispanics overall and other minorities have a hard time with the exit exams and have a hard time staying in school and have a hard time feeling engaged. And they were saying that NCLB, while it has been good to know the numbers because now we have clear data on that, it has not really helped from what we had before. And they don't see it as neither good nor bad, but they simply say it's really not working for what it was meant to do. And so they're aware of it.
Just a quick comment. I think you were with us, and Dr. Burnley, when we were back to see the federal delegation a year or two ago, Senator Begich, even at that time, was speaking strongly opposing aspects of NCLB for the very reason I stated that, again, basically, if teachers don't have the answers to the problems, who does? That's the bottom line. And for some reason, the educational system, I'm talking state and nationwide, has come to the point where we don't believe that teachers have the answers to the problems. I think there's a way to ensure accountability. Everyone wants to be able to ensure that students tested in the MATSU can be compared to students all over the country and possibly all over the world. I don't think there's any doubt, but I'll be brief. I still do a tremendous amount of work with teachers, whether it was through the Teacher Mentor Project and whether it's through ATP, Alaska Teacher Placement. And I just went recruiting for Alaska Teacher Placement for districts statewide, and the number of teachers that want to stay in the profession is dropping dramatically. And there's many reasons for that. But part of it is many teachers that spoke to me this past week said, we went into the profession to be teachers. And what we found out was that when we get in there, it's almost a straitjacket on our abilities to use what we've been taught, what we know. And it's not necessarily working. So I think what we want is the same thing. We want kids to excel, but we're not going to get the answers to the problems from Washington, Juneau, at 30,000 feet. It's got to come from folks that are on the ground in the classroom. So anyway, I think this will help make a statement to that effect that you want to help us, give us the resources. We can get more teachers on the ground. We can get more resources in the classroom, and then let teachers help solve the problem. Any other comments? So we have a motion on the floor. Let's vote. Motion passes. It's unanimous. This takes us down to item C, 12-119, Birch Tree Charter Renewal. Is there a motion to move this item?
I make a motion that we move 12-119.
Birch Tree Charter renewal.
I'll second.
Motion moved by Member Lacey, seconded by Member Welton. Are there members of the public that would like to speak upon this item? Seeing none, is there a staff report?
Mr. President, I just want to reiterate that this was a clerical error in EED. Our school board did vote to have a five-year charter for Birch Tree. Inadvertently, when they put that on the register, they put it for 3 years. EED has taken responsibility for the error, but in order to have it changed, they need to have it voted on by their state school board. And to ensure that it passes, they needed a statement from our school board to ensure them that it was 5 years. And so we are assisting EED in correcting the mistake.
Member Welton, excuse me, Member Cordero.
Through the president, wouldn't it make more sense to send a letter or pass a resolution than actually reapprove something that we've already approved for 5 years?
Through the president, we were sending the letter at the request. That would be the fastest way to get it approved. This is a direction from EED that the best way that they can get it back through their board is to do it in this manner. Okay. That we had originally 5 years, and that, yes, we are sure we wanted 5 years.
Any other questions of staff? Any comments? Okay, we have a motion on the floor. Let's vote. Motion passes. It's unanimous. This takes us down to the non-action category. This under non-action items, we have A, 12-122, first reading, BP 6190, charter schools. Staff?
Mr. President, what we have before us is a change in policy, and it also meets the requirement for the board goals in establishing a report that is based on data of evidence of success of charter schools. So this was an objective. I guess the pathology of this is that we began speaking with the charter schools in requesting and taking a look at and having the charter schools be involved in the report. The end of the year report, and they have selected one, and it actually is an adjustment from the National Charter School Policy Commission and Board. Actually has examples and samples of charter school reports, and basically it has the data. Our Munis system will front load the data, and then the charter school can add their specific items. In discussing that and meeting the board goal, we noticed that policy called for a report in front of the board, only two charter schools at a time, during the end of the year. And a discussion occurred with our charter school committee group that involved administration and charter schools. Rather than having this item, a written item, and a presentation, because sometimes a presentation, they're wondering, you know, what do you want to see? They would really rather focus on the learning and their teachers and the students at their school and provide a written report that is pretty stringent to the board at a certain time at the end of the year, and it would all be uniform between all of the charter schools. So it wouldn't be like even charter schools were trying to dance around, well, what is this charter school doing? What does the board really want? Am I one-upping this school? That the report would be uniform, and it would meet board policy. So your board goal, in essence, turned into a change in policy, if you will, a request for that from the charter school principals, APC members, and administration.
Thank you. Are there questions for members of the board? Member Pauger.
I notice on here that we're asking them to report on ethnicity, low income, special education, English language learners. Low income, I'm wondering how they're going to come up with that number if they don't do the school lunch.
Even though schools may not provide a school lunch, we do encourage that they fill out free and reduced. There's also other indicators through the community and state support and federal support that actually show up on the registry. But we do encourage all schools to be able to fill that out. Even though they may not receive the benefit of a free or reduced lunch, we encourage them to demonstrate the revenue that their family earns.
Any other questions? Seeing none, this item will reappear at the next school board meeting for action. This takes us down to item B under non-action, discussion school schedules. This is a result of a request by a board member from our last meeting to have a discussion on the school schedules, and I'm going to turn this over to Dr. Perarmo.
Thank you, Mr. President. I did have a meeting with Mr. Lacey. It was a good, productive meeting, and we discussed the concerns. And for this discussion, I'm just going to review in brief the seven-period day and what has occurred. I know that much testimony is given on the subject, and it's actually turned into taking a quote and, you know, re-speaking to it and back and forth. And so basically, we're going to provide all the information that the administration has, as Mr. Lacey would say, for the board to just come up with a decision. So please know, in January of 2011, when we were looking at a reduction of staff for this school year, FY12, Dr. Burnley charged the Office of Instruction, which I was in charge of at the time, with finding solutions to minimize the effects of budgetary shortfalls. If you recall, the board requested, when we make these reductions, we don't want to lose programs. The $8.9 million budget deficit required a reduction of 95 teachers in FY 2011, which we did established an early retirement incentive, and it required intensive study of scheduling options. Had our district high schools maintained a six-period schedule, there would have been a loss of programs, course offerings, including intervention and advanced placement courses. Schools would struggle to comply with the federal mandates currently being addressed with RTI. Throughout the seven-period day implementation process, the Office of Instruction has worked diligently to embrace input and provide information to school board members, principals, counselors, and teachers across the district. Please know that since March of 2011, there have been 8 school board meetings where information was provided about the seven-period day or the seven-period day was discussed by administration. This includes a presentation by me, as well as comments from Dr. Burnley. Additionally, it included student advisory board representatives commenting that the seven-period day had also been discussed at their board meetings. A press release was issued June 22, 2011, featuring information on the seven-period day. There have been 3 superintendent management meetings, which are business meetings with the principals, where I met with secondary principals to discuss this process. Since the inception of the Board Connect newsletter in July of 2011, there have been 7 additions that have addressed the concerns of the seven-period day. There have been 14 formal meetings since January of 2011 with subcommittees, union leadership, MSBSD leadership, school administrators, and the task force around this issue of seven-period day. A primary focus at these meetings was on administrators gathering feedback from their staff. I'm also going to share the attachment is the school climate survey results on staff perceptions on work roles and opportunities to influence what happens to demonstrate evidence that this did occur. Additionally, there have been a countless number of informal conversations with principals, teachers, and students where input was being gathered and professional conversations were taking place around what is best for MSBSD. Principals and counselors have provided positive and reflective feedback regarding the necessity of the seven-period day. In addition, when we did hear from the students, their request was for the additional meeting time for clubs and activities, and the seven-period day was adjusted to meet the student request. Information regarding the implementation process of timelines and et cetera are listed on the MSB website for everyone to view. The most recent committee, which we called the Master Scheduling Task Force, was formed to discuss options for FY13. Please know that we had this final task force due to teachers. This was a task force made up of teachers, by teachers, not administration. Representatives from comprehensive high schools, district office teachers, and MSEA president formed a work group to discuss the options. The Office of Instruction directed teams to go back to buildings and collect some type of formal feedback from all staff. They used in-school survey data, written ballots, and a show of hands at the different schools. Given the current budget scenario, please know that the task force, made up of teachers, recommended the current seven-period bell schedule for FY13 only given the scenarios of our budgeting. Again, we do know that everyone probably would like to go back to what we used to do. Based on the number one priority from the task force and in an effort to increase instructional time with students within the seven-period day, the following was proposed by the teachers. This is something we would like to work with. Reduce the number of parent-teacher conference days by 2 at the secondary level. Reduce the number of site-based professional development days by 2, providing for more class time for students to regain that lost class time. In addition, it was discussed to add a 10 to 15 minutes of instructional time at the start and end of each school day, which technically at this time is prohibited by the MSEA agreement. I want to reference that school climate connectedness survey. We have information about a survey provided by MSEA. Recently, the Alaska Association of School Boards did a survey in school called the School Connectedness Survey, and Matsu participated in this survey. It was a survey done online while kids were in school during the day. The end for those numbers, the number of participants, or the end, is provided on the second page in the graph. But I wanted you to know, in the results, 82% of students feel they have someone outside of school that can help with their homework, whereas 18 do not. Despite the concern that the seven-period day has prevented teachers from connecting with students to assist with homework, a large majority of students believe they have support outside of school to complete homework. The ability to double-block students in strategies, courses, and interventions allows for students who do not feel like they have support at home to receive the support they need. Based on the Likert scale, students were asked to choose whether teachers or other adults at their school believe that all students can do good work. 90% of students provided a positive response to this question. Staff were asked a similar question, which shows 98% positive result. Despite concerns that the seven-period day is preventing students from doing good work, an overwhelming majority of students and staff report positive results in their beliefs. Students and staff were also asked if decisions were made on what is best for students. Please know that this survey was given coincidentally outside of any kind of seven-period day discussion. And the results show that 83% of students and 93% of staff believe that decisions are made based on what is best for students. Additionally, 93% of staff district-wide believes work rules at school are fair. The comprehensive high schools responded similarly on this question and reported the following. Colony High School, 92%. Houston, 97%. Matsu Career and Technical, 100%. Palmer High School, 92%. And Wasilla, 95%. Staff were asked if they felt they had a lot of informal opportunities to influence what happens in their school. 92% of staff district-wide believe they do have an influence. The comprehensive high schools responded similarly on this question and reported the following. Colony High School, 84%. Houston High School, 97%. Matsu, 100%. Palmer High School, 80%. And Wasilla. The results of the survey and questions related to the items that have been brought up by teachers through the MSEA survey demonstrate different knowledge and different information. I do know that changing from a six-period day to a seven-period day does change a schedule. It does change the productivity. It is like we're doing more in the day, trying to get more done to offer opportunities to students. Are staff working harder, if you will? I would say absolutely. You saw presentations from teachers today. Not only are they working hard in their day jobs, things like Matsu Schools Foundation, they're volunteering for children outside. The goodwill of kids and work is in our staff's hearts. It truly is. If you ask the question, are students working harder? Yes. I happen to believe that students should be the hardest people working to get an education because it is their education that they will use for their lifetime. So is productivity more? Yes. Are students working harder? Yes. This is our current reality. We have uncovered every rock that we can, looked at every avenue. If the board desires to move to a six-period day, we certainly will do that. But we would need assistance in deciding what programs you would like to see go, or which classes you would like to see the PTR raised. We will follow through. This is not about upsetting teachers or upsetting children or having to work too hard. This is about doing the best we can with what we have, where we are. And I believe in the goodwill of the teachers and administration and counselors who said they were trying to do the best and make the best decisions. I don't think they were trying to fool me. Thank you.
Questions for members of the board? Member Welton.
Just, I know the answer to this, but maybe when you're reading it, somebody in the audience or listening on air might not understand, but under 13A, it talks about the ability to double block students. If you didn't understand that you're talking about two classes that are together, right?
Through the president, yes, and actually that is probably a growth area in which we missed this year. When we added another 7 period, a lot of kids took another very difficult class. We've become smarter in knowing that even kids who are in AP courses need that time to reflect on the information and get assistance. And so what we did was we double blocked sometimes an extra period with an AP class or with an intervention class so that they had double the time. Counselors understand now that our credit requirements allow for students to have more choice and not so much rushed. But if we did create an error this year, it was in loading up those schedules too much with more difficult coursework and not allowing students to know that you will have time, if we have a 7-period day, over 4 years to gain those credits. That's probably the ability that Delaney is being able to have her credits her junior year before she even takes off. So it just allows some flexibility, but we did overload really some of our highest achieving students, and they were stressed out. We're getting smarter about scheduling and double blocking, as Member Welton mentioned.
Questions for members of the board? Other questions? Okay, I need a little direction. Member Lacey, this was raised by yourself at the last meeting. Was your thought that this would be something that would take place next year as opposed to this year?
You mean the 6-period day change?
Yes. Do you have any options or any suggestions or thoughts? And the reason I ask that is because, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is what administration believes is the best option?
Through the president, administration believes it is the best option through the information provided on master scheduling from counselors, principals, and teacher task force.
So if we vote on something at the next meeting, what are we voting on? That's, I guess, my question I'm trying to understand.
To keep or to get rid of the 7-period day? That's what I'd like to see.
Okay, so if we vote on that, then we would have to then have a subsequent meeting, I'm assuming, and I'm trying to understand, on what programs that we would cut or want to have cut.
Sure.
Member Welton.
Point of order. I don't believe that this is in school board purview, because we are not to control what the superintendent does so much. We are to supervise to see that the work gets done and things like this, but I don't know that we should be involved in the program part of things that much. And I know we have to agree. This shows a lot of work has been done, a lot of things have been sorted out, and as a supervisor, if I believe that the work's been done and we're not to be micromanaging, and that's what it feels like we're doing.
Member Larson.
I tend to agree with Member Welton that is our responsibility to oversee policies and procedures and stuff like that. And we have written our goals and objectives for the year for our administration and Dr. Paramo last summer. And it included this kind of scenario that's going on. And if we decide to change, say, a seven-period day to six-period day in the middle of these goals and objectives, then I don't feel that we're doing the correct thing in setting our goals and objectives from year to year. You know, if we want to revisit this next summer, we could do that, but right in the middle of everything to change this, I also agree it would be somewhat not giving the support to our administration and their hard work in trying to figure out what the board wants. This is something that the board wanted. We didn't want to lose courses. We did not want to lose advanced courses with a cut of 90-some teachers. We wanted to maintain all this, and this is what our administration came up with. So we could maintain our core curriculum as well as add core curriculum. To go back on that now would be say to the administration, well, we really didn't mean it. We really didn't mean our goals and objectives that we set last summer.
Member Gaddis.
Yes, I see this. I can understand where Member Lacey is coming from. I mean, this is truly a struggle. Even the kids are struggling. I get that. But at the same time, I ask the school kids, even those in the audience here tonight, and they'll state it's a struggle, but they themselves cannot figure anything better, and they're willing to take this than give up any of their courses. So that being said, you know, I think we all realize, including the teachers, it's a tough one. It's tough for everybody, and we're all pushing and pulling, and at the end of the day, it's really about what best we can do for kids. It's not some punishment that somebody's doing onto teachers. So that being said, we ask the district to try to keep these classes and do the best that we could for kids. And I would recommend that we not go to vote and that we not continue this. We've asked it to be done. It's being done. It's really time. I appreciate the presentation, but I think it's time for us to move on.
Any other questions? Member Welton.
I want to make a comment that I'm not anti-teacher. I am very, very understanding of being under stress there. My feeling is that the financial situation is that we don't have options here at this time. I would like for us in board retreat to really look at a number of different things that maybe could be in place for 2014. One of the things I was thinking about is extended contracts. How much would it cost to add a period afterwards to meet the programs and do extended contracts? I want to know that. We can't figure that out this year. We just know right now that we're still teetering as to whether we're going to keep everything that we want. Right now, I mean, I'm very pleased with all the work, and hopefully no one will you know, decide that we don't need all the funding that we're getting this year. I appreciate Mr. Lacey's concerns because I know what it is to be a teacher also. I'm not a high school, elementary, or middle school, but college students also are overwhelmed by the number of courses that they take and things that are involved. And I see that, and teachers get the brunt of that. I do believe that our district supports the teachers and offers the professional development that will help. It may not be perfect, but it will help. Thank you.
Any other questions for members of the board on this issue? Mr. Lacey, you brought this forward, and I believe you brought it forward with obviously good intent. Do you feel this is something that would be better placed at the retreat, or are you still insisting on an up and down vote? Because it appears that the majority of the board doesn't know what to vote on.
I would like an up and down vote and be done with it.
Okay. You're going to have to get another board member to support what Mr. Lacey wants on the next agenda. Is there a board member that wishes to concur with Mr. Lacey to put this on the next board agenda item or next board agenda? Okay, seeing none, I would suggest that we put this on as part of our retreat in the summer to better discuss how we can make this issue work better for kids, staff, others. So with that, this takes us down to future items of future business. This is item 10. Next meeting is going to be up in Talkeetna at 6 p.m. Are there any other future items, future business? Member Lacey.
The next meeting, we're going to talk about the changes in board policy that I outlined last week.
That the board policy committee went over, correct? Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. And I'll have something for you by next week.
Yes.
I have it
down.
Okay.
That will have to be a work session. Let's, Member Cordero.
Just wanted to let you know, and I think I mentioned it before, I will be at a conference for work, and so I'm probably not going to be able to participate in this meeting.
Okay. So excused. Member Larson.
I will be traveling with my other board. I'll be out of state in Colorado, but I will be able to tie in telephonically on the second.
Okay, so can you connect with Stacy to make sure that this occurs? He's going to be out of state, so he's going to have to do it telephonically. Any other future items at this point? Dr. Perma?
Mr. President and Board, I wanted you to know that just for an initial non-action item, we're going to discuss the boundary concerns that our parents have in elementary school as well as the middle school with the new schools down Kinnick. And we're going to encourage our families to be at the June 6th meeting to testify. So I just want to let you know that it's just the first information meeting from Shannon Bingham and the presentation of the information. There's going to be a meeting on April 30th with the family members, 140 family members that are affected by a proposed change to provide feedback before we bring it to the board. And that's why it is later, because we have to have that official feedback. The individual focus groups are over now, and we want to take the general input to provide the best thinking of the community and administration for the board. But please know we have encouraged and will continue to encourage folks to come out at that June 6th meeting, and a decision would be made at the next one possibly, if it couldn't be at June 6th. Thank you.
Okay. So with that, this takes us down to item 11, which is our next and last persons to be heard on non-agenda items. Once again, the speaker states his or her name for the record. The speaker is limited to 3 minutes per meeting. The speaker is limited to non-agenda items. Agenda items will be open for public comment as they appear on the agenda. The speaker's comments should be appropriate for all audiences, including school-aged children. The speaker is limited to comments of a general nature, positive or negative, which may not be attributed to any specific individual. Issues involving concerns specific to any single individual should be submitted in writing and given to the board clerk to be resolved. The issue may be determined to be appropriate for persons to be heard or may be handled in an executive session or may be routed through a more appropriate complaint process. No disturbance or willful interruption of any board meeting shall be permitted. Persistence by an individual or group shall be grounds for the chair to terminate the privilege of addressing the meeting. The board may remove disruptive individuals and order the room cleared if necessary. This is not a question and answer time. Speakers may be referred to the superintendent or designee or take the issue under advisement. It's a maximum of 1 hour per meeting. This is our again, 30 minutes in our last section. Again, there's 3 minutes to speak to the board. Are there any members of the public that would like to speak at this time? If so, please come forward and state your name for the record.
My name is Jill Shulman. I'm the president of the Matsu Education Association. It's great to see you again. Been at the borough assembly meetings for the past couple of nights, and although I missed Dr. Paramo and Mr. Forrest's presentation, we had an executive board meeting that went a little late. So I'm sure we'll be seeing each other at future borough assembly and budget meetings. So that's what this season's all about. I'd also publicly like to thank Member Lacey for bringing the discussion forth about the seven-period day and members about their comments and concerns. Obviously, it's an ongoing concern with staff members. As President Dunleavy said, it's the teachers that are the professionals. They know. And you've heard a variety of speakers throughout the past couple of months talking about the seven-period day. I believe it's something that we need to together solve. I'd like to also say that I'm very proud to work in the MATSU, and during the past couple of months, and I'm sure we'll continue to hear comments about the seven-period day because not everyone has had an opportunity to speak, or they haven't had the time in their schedule to. But I'm proud to work here in the MATSU, and it's because of my colleagues who are dedicated standing up for what's right for students. During the past several meetings, you've heard from a variety of educators and parents. And I believe, like I said, you'll hear additional concerns about the seven-period day. So thank you for continuing to discuss it. Thank you for being willing to talk about it over the summer as well so that we can make sure that we do what's best for students and we do what's best for those who are in front of those students every day. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to speak before the board? Please come forward and state your name for the record.
My name is Linda Haller. I'm a voter and a taxpayer in this school district as well as a teacher. And I can appreciate all the comments you made about the seven-period day, but I hardly think any of you can appreciate how hard we're working until you have experienced it. It is truly a unique experience, I must say. And I, for one, have never been afraid of hard work. I can tell you that the last 20 years, I put in a lot of extra hours, and I've never minded it. This is the first time I've really resented it, because it's overwhelming. And I don't think that you can have an appreciation for it unless you really experience it. And I'm disappointed that we're going to put this off. The other thing is I can also appreciate taking the student position on this, but students really don't know what they're missing. We can serve them half a chicken, and they'll never know they're missing the whole. The only way you would know is if you had the course before and then took the course again under a seven-period day. You don't know what you're missing. This has axed an enormous amount of education from our system, like it or not. And I hope that future generations aren't going to realize what they missed, because we're throwing that away and we're saying it's just not useful. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other are additional members of the public? Please come forward, state your name for the record.
Yes, my name is Conrad Hauer. I'm a taxpayer and a voter and also a husband of a teacher that I've watched all year long and is totally... And I've sat back and I listened to all the teachers talk here to you people. And I have come to the conclusion that if you believe in the seven-period day, you believe in the throwaway program. In other words, you build it cheap, build it fast. And if it doesn't work, just throw it away. So how many students do you want to throw away? I heard tonight they say, well, we came up with this idea, and if we tell them to change it, we're micromanaging. Well, guess what? That is your job. If you find a program or something that you started, and sometimes we all start things that doesn't work out. Chevrolet does it. Ford does it. They just say, hey, it didn't work. This one isn't working. And so please, it is time for you to micromanage. So please, for the students, just remember, how many do you want to throw away? And in the oil field where I work from, there was a great saying, and it says that a lot of people have some really, really good ideas, but sometimes they're just best kept as good ideas. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Other members of the public? Okay. This takes us down to item 12, which is correspondence and board committee reports. Are there any committee reports at this time?
Member
Welton?
I have just some notes from the site selection committee, and you can add anything you want to. So update on the Palmer Elementary School, looking at the railroad and the 60-foot-long buses and trying to stack up between being able to use the going to the east side of Glen Highway. We had a traffic engineer from DOT online to talk about the information and just what the plan is, and they want to make sure that we use something that's going to be signaled. And I don't think we would want to use something that isn't signaled. And there was just a lot of concerns. The road is not going to move away from the track because the road is in the right-of-way. And Mr. Bingham was there to help give out information about the railroad and about the sand and gravel operations. And he did have a map that showed that in the future there was going to be pretty equal numbers of students on both sides of the Glen Highway, so we're going to need a school on both sides anyway. That is looking down the road quite a bit. And then we had some issues about the process for buying land, and then we got into the KGB middle high school issues and the KGB elementary. And I believe that was all. If you have something else to add to that.
And if I might add to that, I'm also on the school site selection. I think we as a school board and, quite frankly, the folks on the assembly are getting a little frustrated that a site has not been selected for the high school, middle school on KGB. So we heard that frustration, and we, again, made it very, very clear that we need a site selected. There was a lot of digging into the weeds and doing things beyond selecting sites. Discussion was that we had discussion about what this committee did, and it, quite frankly, selects the sites, and the borough is to acquire the site. They have clear direction. Of course, we think that every month when we go away, but I think that it's clear this time, so I think we're onward.
Thank you. Any other committee reports? Correspondence? Seeing none, this will take us down to item 13, comments from school board and administration. Let's start with administration. Dr. Parma.
Mr. Forrest.
A response to the request regarding the resolution for a preliminary budget. We'll be presenting at the next board meeting a recommended board policy change to ensure that that's very clear in board policy.
Dr. Parmo?
Mr. Stone?
No, just really happy with all the work that took place and a better scenario for our future here.
I don't have any further comments, Mr. President.
Member Mitchell.
I just want to applaud everyone on their efforts and all the hard work that went into the budget this year. That's very impressive. So, good work.
Member Cordero.
I, too, want to thank Dr. Paramo and her team for crunching all the numbers to make sure that we had the best information available today. And so that was great, great work.
Member Lacey.
Through President Dunleavy, I'd like to know what it would take to get this program turned into a littered shooting sport for our schools. As a person who is a volunteer instructor for the fish and game in the shooting sports, we attract a lot of kids that aren't into anything else, and this actually improves their grades and everything else. So I think this is a worthy thing, and the fact that we don't have to pay any money for it. Thank you.
Member Welton.
Was at the Justice Coalition meeting this morning. There was quite a slew of people there, and Mr. McPhail was there too, several other school district employees, and good working group trying to get services for our youth, and the program that was listed in the newspaper about feeding the kids through the new kitchen at the Boys and Girls Club that was discussed, and information about it only takes $40 for a year's membership for a kid. And so if people want to help out, some scholarships for those kids would be helpful. There's a lot of other youth activities going on. I want to make one comment on why I did not wish to have an up or down vote on the 7-period day. Part of it is to do with the amount of work between now and June that would have to be done to get the scheduling and to sort out what programs would be left or in and out, and it would, I believe, tax administration to a high degree. Not that isn't their job to do that if we were to ask them to do it, but I believe that since there have been 8 board meetings since this time that it started, that we've had management meetings, that we've done all this, that it's it means that there has been enough thought put into it. I'm sorry that people are going to be burnt out a little bit on this, but that's why the professional development is there, to give you those skills. If you don't want those skills, that's something else, too. I believe that all teachers want what's best for kids, and I would ask that they also respect that I want what's best for kids. And at this time, that's what we can do. I do believe that there may be a solution that is not the same old, that we might be able to come up with something else, but it's going to cost us. And we have to see where those costs will take us. And I believe a little more time over the summer might really put in something that will be the best that we can do for children. Thank you.
Thank you. Laura Larson.
I too would like to see some action on this SCTP organization, but I'd like to see it come on slow, like a club sport, possibly next year. So, I mean, not to overburden anybody right now, but that dialogue to start, to jump right into a letter of sport. You're talking transportation money and stipends, and what we've done in the past, or what I understand we've done in the past, like baseball and softball, it took years as a club sport. Get it established, and then, I'm not saying years on this, but a period of time, then if a board in the future wants to look at jumping into a regular paid sport. But I'd like some sort of action, or at least look at this spring and maybe this summer, but nothing like for next week or anything like that. But it's a good idea. I also want to thank the continuous effort by your staff, Dr. Bramo, preparing the information that we need to make our decision, including the Board Connect, and keeping an update on bills and everything else. It's a lot of work to keep 7 people informed, and I do really appreciate it. Thank you.
Laura Gaddis.
Yes, I three would like to have this Clay shooting looked at. Quite frankly, I would just like a really, really brief report of what it takes to get it to a letter situation. And then, of course, we could discuss from there on whether we wanted to do it next year or not. I really don't know what it takes, but I know this is a good program, so I'd just like to see what it takes to get to that point. That's it.
Member Pollager.
I visited Mr. Jensen's Wasilla High School civics class during last week. It was enjoyable. Students had some really good questions. We spoke about the school lunch program and how that works and possibilities of improving food taste. It was a good class. I am disappointed that the borough does not seem to have the same sense of urgency as voters, parents, and students about the fields and tracks at our high schools. And I'm disappointed that we won't have those this summer. And I really wish the borough would take another look at that. Thanks.
Thank you.
Just briefly, I concur with a number of folks on the Clay shooting. I would only suggest that administration talk to Neil, because he did indicate that it comes with funds and it's heavily supported. But just walk through the steps to eventually get it to where, as Mr. Lacey said, a lettered support within the schools. I think that might be a great idea, because it would involve students that may not otherwise get involved in school activities. I think the seven period day issue will continue, but I do think that if given an opportunity in the summer at the retreat, between now and then, there could be a whole number of different options that could be looked at, additional information, because I do think that everybody wants to do the right thing for kids. And so I would ask that the staff just keep their eye on that in terms of a retreat issue, that we do our best to be able to come to some resolution where it's working for the kids and everyone else. And lastly, I just want to say that if I'm going to catch her off guard here, if Delaney Mitchell is any indication of 15-year-olds in our school district, we have a lot to be proud of, and I think our future is going to be secure, because it's been very enjoyable working with you, as it was with Kendra and other folks in the district student council. So I just want to thank you, and thank you for hanging in there in some of our meetings and contributing. So it's been a real pleasure. So next school board meeting is in Talkeetna, and with that, it just takes us down to our next item, 14, an executive session. Is there a motion to move us into executive session?
I move to go into an executive session in accordance to Alaska statutes and board policies to talk about negotiations, updates, and the superintendent evaluation. The board will be present, Superintendent Paramo, Mr. Forrest, Mr. Stone, and Katie Gardner.
Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Motion made by Member Cordell to go to executive session, seconded by Member Lacey. Seeing no opposition, we'll retire to executive session. And once again, when we come out, we'll end the meeting. So thank you very much.